Today on Maine Calling, our auto experts on everything from winter tires to new car sticker shock. Did last week's big snowstorm strike before you had a chance to put on your snow tires? Are you new to Maine and wondering if you even need them? Or do you need to buy a car and find yourself reeling from those price tags? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, our automotive experts are here to offer advice on safe winter driving, automotive maintenance, and car shopping in these final days of 2025. We'll also learn about trends in the automotive industry, including what's going on with the electric car market, including why we can't get EVs made in China, and concerns about self-driving cars. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible by contributing listeners and support from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine, now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering healthcare, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Winter weather means adjusting the way we drive and the way we care for our cars. Today, I have two automotive experts with me to talk about safe driving tips, as well as what's happening in the auto industry. With us, John Paul, Senior Manager of Public Affairs and Traffic Safety at AAA Northeast. He is known as the Car Doctor. And Micheline Mickey Maynard, a Boston Globe contributing columnist and the author of The End of Detroit. She also publishes Intersection, Everything That Moves on Substack. Mickey and John, welcome back to Maine Calling.
Thanks so much.
As always, we invite you to join the conversation. Do you have questions about that noise your car is making? Are you in the market for an EV? Do you have another question? Send a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call. As always, 1-800-399-3566. We'll start by asking you all about what's new out there, what cars you're impressed by. John, I know you get to drive a lot of the new cars. What's on your radar?
Well, there's been a couple of different things. One of them that I really enjoyed was the Chevy Equinox EV. Equinox, to me, is a nice size vehicle to start off with. And the idea that it's an electric car, I still really believe we live in a time where there's a ton of consumer choice. If you want to buy an electric car, you can go buy one. If you want to buy a hybrid, you can buy one. If you want to buy a plug-in hybrid, you want to buy a gasoline car, you want to buy a diesel car, you have a lot of choices. And the idea that the Equinox, which has been a pretty good smaller EV, I mean, pretty good smaller SUV, the idea is available in an EV is pretty good. It has a 300-mile range, decent performance, good use of interior stuff. I liked it a lot. Performance-wise, it's not the fastest car out there, but whoever said SUVs are supposed to be fast? It does just fine. Similar to the, you know, smaller Chevrolet Bolt EV, it's not a performance car, but it's peppy enough for everyday driving, merging out on the highway, things like that. And the idea that you can get it in all-wheel drive and a starting price somewhere under $40,000 makes it pretty competitive with other EVs. The other one that I really liked was the, I suppose, anything from Genesis, but the smaller Genesis SUV, the GV70. Like the car a lot. I like the idea it has a V6 engine, performs really well, has Genesis / Hyundai's impressive 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty. And when the weather was warmer, And this is something that people love or hate, I got to evaluate a Cabo electric scooter. And
spell,
I found
spell
it
Cabo.
To be, yeah, it's K-A-A-B-O. And it was a, yeah, and it was a stand-up electric scooter. And it has about a 25-mile range. And it scared the daylights out of
I was
me.
gonna say, you're so brave. I'm not sure I would have done
Not
that.
not that it's super fast, but the I you know it's been a long time since I've been a kid on a kick scooter, and people use them all the time. I see people going back and forth to working in restaurants and other businesses, and they're zipping all over the place in them. I rode it off and on for a few days and kind of went, either I'm too old or too afraid to ride this thing, especially in and around traffic. But it gives you the idea of what micro mobility is. The idea that you can have this device that can get you around, it can do it fairly quickly, and then you can kind of fold it up and bring it into the house or bring it into the office or work or wherever you're going. You can pick it up and carry it. It weighs about 48 pounds. So, but I think just not for me.
Okay, Mickey, what cars are you? What do you have your eye on? What are some of the
Well,
trends emerging from Detroit, or what are you,
yeah.
or I shouldn't just say Detroit anymore, but what are you watching?
So my Prius is now 10 years old. It's a 2015, and I did go and get my snow tires put on it just before Michigan. I'm in Ann Arbor, got a great big snowfall. So I'm glad to have that. But right before I put the snow tires on, I was getting 50 miles to the gallon, which I think is pretty good for a 10-year-old vehicle. And my Dave at my auto garage says, oh, I can keep it going to 300,000 miles. So for me, this has been a year of hybrids, and hybrids are not getting as much attention as EVs do. But for a lot of people, they're the more practical move because there's still fears about what they call range anxiety, that your vehicle might run out of juice, essentially. And so with hybrids, you have the option of gasoline. And Toyota is very swiftly moving its entire lineup, or a lot of its lineup, over to hybrids. And in the last year, they've made the Camry the sedan and hybrid only. The RAV4 is hybrid. They have a mid-size pickup truck called the Tacoma that has gone to a hybrid version, and the sales of that are up 400%. So for me, and obviously Kia, Hyundai, others make hybrids as well, but Toyota's, clearly the hybrid leader. And I think for me, that's the story. We went for almost, I think, 25 years with hybrids available in the United States, and they never really caught on except when gas prices were above $4 a gallon. But now there they are, and they're taking a larger chunk of the market.
Our executive producer, Jonathan Smith, had a Prius. Its odometer stuck at 299,999, and he thinks it made 350 before it before he finally gave it up. But I'm struck by a couple things that John said when he was talking about the Equinox EV. One, that it's an EV, so this is, John, just a real regular American car. And I don't mean that by an insult, but it's not some sort of strange and the kind, it's not some sort of futuristic thing you're going to see at a car show. It's a Chevy Equinox, and that it's an EV now, or you can buy the EV. And also, John, that you said under $40,000. In years past, that would not have been considered inexpensive, but in today's automotive world, that's inexpensive, right?
I hate to say it, but it really is. I mean, the average price of a new car today is over $50,000. And I'm old enough where I remember the luxury tax used to kick in at 32.5. So that was, if you spent more than $33,000, you were paying luxury tax. And I don't even know where it kicks in these days. But yeah, cars are getting expensive. And at some point, you have to think the consumer is going to say, I can't pay for this anymore. And maybe I don't need all of these bells, whistles, extra conveniences just to go to the supermarket and bring my kids to school. And it's those accessories, it's that extra electronics that are in cars today. I mean, cars literally have miles of wire in them today because of all the electronics in cars today. At some point, the public's got to push back. The idea that I looked at a pickup truck, I think it was a Ram pickup truck a couple of weeks ago. It was brand new. I think it was
Oh my
$97,000.
gosh.
That's ridiculous. It should come with two bedrooms and two bathrooms for $97,000, you know.
So there
I wouldn't
are
be
some.
surprised if one does. But let me ask you this, Mickey, because this is what you think about. You think about and study and talk with people in the automotive industry. Do they believe that there's a ceiling to how high cars are going to go, or do they think consumers will just keep finding ways to pay for these sky-high prices?
So there are some car loans that are $1,000 a month, which just my first car loan was $234.15 per month. It's sort of in my brain that that was what I paid for my first new car. And the idea of $1,000 a month for a car loan, I mean, that's people's rent in some places. So this is what people are talking about is an affordability crisis. And so the auto industry has kind of a choice to make. And we should probably talk about the role that tariffs have played in some of this, but just to make my point, a $50,000 vehicle. Generally, the auto industry wants your income, to get a good car loan to be 2.5 times the car price. So that means that the person buying that vehicle should have an income of $125,000 a year. That is not the median income in the United States, but what it means is that all the automakers have to focus on people of at least upper middle class, if not wealthy backgrounds. So then they have lots of choices. Those folks, they can buy from anybody. They can buy a European car. They can buy a Japanese or a Korean vehicle. And so then the competition gets a lot stiffer. And what that means is that they probably will not be selling many more vehicles. They're going to have to focus right around where they are now. And the auto industry has always been built on this concept of higher and higher sales. And at one point, so at least the companies collectively sell about 15 million vehicles a year. And at one point, I remember maybe 10 years ago, the talk that the average would get up to 20 million or 22 million a year. And so this affordability issue is dampening down car sales. I hope
Mickey,
that's
we're
not too
all
technical.
reading though about how in other countries, especially in Asia, there are these super inexpensive electric cars
Right.
that everyone is buying. So, two questions: why can't Americans buy those? Or why don't American automakers make those?
So the reason we can't buy them is that there are tariffs of 200% on Chinese, specifically EV imports. So it doesn't matter if they're imported from China or from Mexico, where people thought the Chinese would go build them. You're not going to pay, even if a vehicle is $8,000, then you have a 200% tariff, which makes it 24,000. So it's not the little cheap plaything that you thought it was. But also, EVs have the car makers, they've gone through these scares. Two of them went bankrupt in 2009, and they've really gotten to the point where they don't want to build anything that's not going to be profitable. And we've seen that with EVs, that even before the EV subsidies went away this fall, the car makers were starting to pull back on their EV production because they weren't selling. They weren't selling in the numbers that would make them a going concern for the car makers. So I think they're focusing on what makes the highest profits for them.
I do want to acknowledge, though, we're talking about the industry, the fact that people are going to have a lot of really practical questions this hour. A lot of them are already coming in, John, and I am going to start because yesterday I drove to an appointment. When I got in the car, it said that it was 11 degrees outside and it said that my tire pressure was low. Now, I did not, I was I needed to make my appointment in time, so I did not pull over and put air in my tires. It said that the tire pressure was 28 or 29 in each one. By the time I got to my doctor's appointment, and you know, John, that the answer is the tire pressure had risen and the light had gone off. Did I do the right thing? When we get in the car and it's a cold morning and it says that our tire pressure is low, do we wait and drive a little bit and see if the light goes off?
Not really. What you should try to do is you should adjust your tire pressure for the weather conditions. So ideally, you should have gotten out your air compressor when it was 7 degrees outside and pumped up your tires to 31 or 33 pounds or whatever they were supposed to be. And Air pressure and temperature are very much related. I think about Super Bowls and football sometimes because that was a whole football air pressure controversy back then. But for every 10-degree drop in temperature, your tires lose about 1 pound of air. And every month, your tires lose 1 pound of air. So it's not unusual when the temperature drops from 40 degrees to zero that you're going to lose 3 or 4 pounds of air. And if you haven't been keeping up on your air pressure, that 5 or 6 pound window is enough to turn on the low tire light. When you drove your car, the molecules of air kind of shook back and forth inside the tire. They got warm and expanded. And all of a sudden, now your light went out because you have the right amount of air. The next cold morning, same thing's going to happen again. So, ideally, what you need to do is air up the tires kind of to fit the temperature of the season. And what happens, though, it's sort of interesting when your tires are properly inflated, the air pressure doesn't really grow. A lot of people
So if
think,
I
well, if I put
inflated them, it wouldn't get overinflated.
it wouldn't get overinflated because what happens is the less the molecules of air can move around, the less heat generates and less expansion. So it's this combination of you filled up the tires where they belong, but in a way you absolutely did the right thing because if you stopped at a gas station or somewhere and dragged out the air hose on a 5, 6, 7 degree day, you could get moisture in that air hose. And now all of a sudden you're putting moist air inside your tires, or the valve is going to actually get ice that builds up in it. And you're like, well, I aired up my tires. Then you came out of your appointment, and all of a sudden you look and you have a flat tire because the valve didn't seal properly because a little bit of ice jammed in there. So, in a way, you absolutely did the right thing. So,
So your general advice, and this is really for all of us because we're having this weather where it's been extremely cold and then it moderates a little bit, but let's face it, it's not going to be what anybody would describe as warm for a while now.
right.
All of us probably ought to put a little more air in our tires right now.
Well, what you should do is you should check the air pressure. Get out in the morning when the tires are cool or cold, check the air pressure and adjust the air pressure. If you get out and they're 28 pounds and your car calls for 32 or 33 or whatever it is, you should put 32 or 33 in.
But
Is
not
it going
when
to be?
it's 5 degrees and not at the neighborhood service
Ideally,
station.
you should do that when it's a little bit nicer weather. So even if you said, well, I know my tires are underinflated by 3 or 4 pounds, when the weather got a little bit nicer, you could put a little bit of extra air in, and then when it cools back off, you'll be back about where it belongs. But no, ideally, you should check your tire pressure once a month, no matter what the temperature is. So summertime, wintertime, 90-degree day or a 0 day, you should check your tire pressure once a month. And check your tire condition at the same time because your tires are the only part of the car that touches the ground. So you want to make sure they're properly inflated and they're in good shape.
Well, we are going to talk even more about tires when we come back. We're going to talk about snow tires versus all-weather tires versus studded tires. Already we have questions coming in about that. We are talking about cars on Main Calling. Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Main Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Our topic today, cars, trucks, and SUVs. My guest, Mickey Maynard, who is a Boston Globe contributing columnist. She publishes a Substack column called Intersection, Everything That Moves. And John Paul hosts the Car Doctor podcast, and he's Senior Manager of Public Affairs and Traffic Safety at AAA Northeast. Share your comments and questions. Send a brief email, talk@mainpublic.org. Comment on our Facebook page or Instagram, or give us a call. 1-800-399-3566. And right now we have calling in Eric Jandro, who is Senior Director of Merchandising at VIP Tires and Service. Eric, thank you so much for calling us.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show.
You know what I'm going to do, Eric? Before I ask you questions, I'm going to go to one of our callers because I think he's going to be asking one of the many tire questions that are coming in. So we're going to go to Rich, who's calling from Eastport. Hi, Rich. Go ahead.
Hi, this is I got a Jetta Sport Wagon turbo diesel, and instead of putting on winter tires or all weather tires, I put on studded snow tires, and I find that not only do I save my summer tires, which are more expensive, I also go ahead and have better survivability on the roads here in Maine. That's all.
Yeah, Rich, thank you. Okay, Eric, that's our first question. What's the difference between a snow tire and a studded tire?
The biggest difference between a snow tire or a winter tire and a studded winter tire, one is the studded winter tire is pinned for studs. So we actually put in metal studs in the tire to gain traction in icy conditions. Also help aid in slush and everything like that to increase your traction when you need it the most.
So, Eric, aren't those not legal some places?
In certain states they aren't legal, and actually in the state of Maine, they are not legal to run within certain times of the year. So actually in the state of Maine, you can legally put on studded tires from October 1st, and then they have to be taken off by the end of May.
Okay. What about the difference between snow tires and all-weather tires? A lot of people think, I don't want to take the time or expense of changing out tires twice a year, and also maybe don't have a place to store them.
Yeah, so an all-weather tire, it's a kind of a newer tire that's made its way into the market here in the United States. Actually, in Europe, they've had them for quite a while, but we've kind of started to, grab a hold of that technology. And basically what it is, it's a tire that has received the Three Peak Mountain Snowflake symbol through testing it gives it extra traction in some of those winter conditions, in that rain, some slush. They're a great alternative if you live in an area that doesn't see a whole lot of snow. Southern New England market would probably be a good area for those. But even if somebody's not going out and about in the winter weather like a lot of other people do, it gives them an option that they can get some better traction in the winter. You are going to sacrifice a little bit of tread wear longevity and a little bit of noise, but you swap that out to get a little extra traction in that winter weather.
So I'm guessing from listening to you that your advice about what people ought to do for their vehicle kind of depends on what kind of vehicle they have and also how they plan to drive it. If someone's living in, say, the Brunswick area or Portland area and only using their car to drive to work in the grocery store, that's a different consideration than someone that's going to be headed up to the mountains every weekend.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it all depends on what you're looking for. How often you're out, but also, take into consideration that, there's no substitute for a winter tire. It gives you so much more attributes and traction and grip in the wintertime over even an all-weather tire that you got to make the right decision based off of your needs.
All right. Well, before we let you go, is there any other sort of general piece of advice or any misconception that you find people often have?
I would just say, if you're unsure on what you should do, definitely lean towards putting a winter tire on your vehicle, especially in some of the misconceptions as an all-wheel drive vehicle. You don't need to put winter tires on. Uh-huh. I would absolutely disagree with that. I think if you have an all-wheel drive vehicle, putting a winter tire on that would be far superior than an all-season. All-season tires typically lose their grip and traction below 45 degrees. So up here in Maine, obviously, we just hit the negative temperatures yesterday. Those all-season tires are not doing what they're intended to do. And having a winter tire on will drastically decrease your braking length, also your steerability and slush, and even your acceleration. So definitely, if you have an all-wheel drive vehicle, please consider putting winter tires on if you want the correct traction in winter.
Well, thanks so much for calling in. That's Eric Jandro, Senior Director of Merchandising at VIP Tires and Service. We're going to go for a call to Ashley, who's calling from South Portland. Hi, Ashley. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I have a 2002 Volkswagen Eurovan, which I love. This is the first year I've decided to put her in storage. And so I'm wondering what I should be doing so that I make sure she can start up come spring.
Great question. John Paul.
I would start with change the oil, get fresh oil in the engine, because the oil won't degrade while it's being parked. A lot of people think it really will lose its viscosity, but if the engine's operating properly, it won't. Putting a car away with dirty contaminated oil leads to some internal engine problems. I would fill the fuel tank. If you live in an area where you can buy recreation fuel, so fuel that's non-ethanol, that's gonna help. Either way, you should add some sort of fuel stabilizer. There's a lot of different brands on the market. One that's been out forever and ever is called Stabil, S-T-A-B-I-L. You want to add that to your fuel tank. That will keep the fuel from getting sour. Depending on the battery in the car, if you have access to electricity and you can put a battery maintainer, not a battery charger, but a battery maintainer, something that won't overcharge the battery, that will keep the battery fully charged. If you are not able to do that, disconnect the battery. That'll keep it from going dead while it's sitting there. If you have a problem with critters, take some steel wool, stuff it in the tailpipe. If you can see where the engine takes in air, if you can cover over that area, there are some great products out there to try to keep critters away. Some of them have chemicals, some of them are more natural. I kind of like the natural ones. One of them smells like a Christmas tree, and it will keep that away. Peppermint, spearmint, all those kind of things are supposed to help keep critters away from your car. But a car that sits for a while can be a home to homeless mice and rats and things. So, you know, taking care of that's a good idea. This is the one time you should air up your tires to the maximum pressure. So if the side of the tire says 36 or 39 pounds, that's what you want to air up. Kind of going back to Jennifer's original question of why are they lower? Because tires normally lose a little bit of air every day. They lose a little bit of air, a pound or two a month. So airing them up to the maximum amount. If you go to a home improvement store and you can get construction styrofoam, so it's sort of that inch or 2 inch thick pink styrofoam that they put on the outside of houses when they insulate them or outside of foundation, get a piece of that, cut it into 1 foot squares, park your tires on top of that. That'll protect your tires from getting flat spots. Check the engine coolant to make sure, check all the vital fluids, make sure they're all in good shape, and lubricate anything that moves, door locks, hinges, hood release, all that sort of stuff. Then you should be in pretty good shape. The one other thing that I would add is those moisture absorbent packets. I don't know what they're called. Thing you put in your closet so it doesn't smell damp. Put a couple of those inside the car. That will help absorb any moisture. I mean, as the weather gets warmer in the springtime, your car can get kind of damp and mildewy inside. That will help absorb the moisture. Put them on a throwaway pie plate, aluminum pie plate, because sometimes they'll suck enough moisture out of the air where they'll overflow, and they're kind of a salt-based thing, so it can make a mess inside the car. So, but if you do all those things, you should be in pretty good shape. Your Eurovan should start right back up in the springtime when you're ready to drive it.
There you go, Ashley. Good luck. I'm going to go here to an email from Noel. I drive a Prius hybrid, which I love. And after more than 230,000 miles, I'm planning to replace it with a plug-in hybrid. My son-in-law's EV is great to drive, but annoying to have to hunt for an operable charger while traveling. Any thoughts on the best plug-in hybrids? Mickey Maynard, you are the one talking about all the hybrids. So what's your advice?
Yeah, so there is a Prius plug-in hybrid. I find it very interesting. The plug-in hybrids have not caught on as much here as they have in other countries. And I think people are maybe reluctant to install a charger, you know, because you can't just plug it into the wall. You have to have the right voltage in your garage. Some you can, but a lot of people get the converter so that they don't They don't have a high bill or they don't blow out their electricity. You want to make sure that you will actually plug it in. So in my case, I don't have a garage, so I would have to go either run a very long extension cord out the house or take it to a charging station, which isn't a big deal because we have lots of them where I live. But you will have a different routine than you did just driving a regular hybrid. And it'll take you a couple weeks probably to get used to that. And then you also need to make sure that, I mean, you can run it on gasoline, it's no problem. But if you are planning to run it off the battery, that you need to get to know the vehicle and how long your charge will last, because you don't want to be off somewhere where the map doesn't show you any chargers. But yeah, this is something that a lot of people are considering at this point in time.
So Mickey, when you the Noel asked which are the best, you did mention that there's a Prius. Are there others as good as the Prius plug-in hybrid?
The one that I see a lot of people looking at is from the Koreans, from Hyundai and Kia are now also getting into this market. And I would go and look at those, but I would do research on them, and I would also think about your lifestyle before you switch over to a plug-in hybrid, because I've heard people say, yeah, we got this plug-in hybrid, and it's the slight inconvenience of remembering to plug it in offsets the savings that we thought we were going to get to it. I mean, it's kind of a it's up to you. I mean, personally, I'm not that interested in a plug-in because it isn't convenient for me, but I can see why it would be attractive to various kinds of owners.
We'll go to Rick calling from Seal Cove. Hi, Rick, go ahead.
Hello, thank you very much for having me. Yeah, thank you very much for having me. Happy holidays to you. I have a couple of comments to make. My wife and I have owned some form of electric vehicle since 2007, when my wife bought a Lexus H450, which was phenomenal on the roads in both heavy snows through the winter and any other time. The weight really makes a big difference with an electric car or electric vehicle. We now have a Kia E6, which is phenomenal in the snow and on the regular roads. But I wanted to make the comment that let's keep in mind hybrids may be a practical solution to transition, but remember they spend most of their effort in the ICE mode. And if we're trying to reduce the amount of greenhouse gases emitted, we need to move away from the ICE engine. Now, Europe, they've found that the biggest effect they've had is to move from internal combustion engine cars to electric bikes. That has helped them reduce their greenhouse emissions from vehicles incredibly so. And we can do the same thing here in the U.S. We have options with many different e-bikes, but I would also suggest a great option is to get an e-trike that will have over 50 miles range and a lot of carrying capacity. I
Well,
would
Rick, thanks
highly
so much
recommend
for your
looking at
call.
those.
We have done main calling programs on electric bikes, and so I appreciate your enthusiasm. And John, I'm just going to turn to you and say this happens every time we do our automotive shows. We have callers from people who have electric cars and have had them, EVs, for a long time, and people who love their EVs are very passionate about them.
They absolutely are. And you have to love that about people, that they found something they like and they really enjoy it. I mean, it's still, you look at the EV infrastructure and where people are charging up, and where I live, the EV infrastructure is terrible. There is no place to charge up within 25 miles of my house. So a pure EV is not a great choice for me. I have driven some plug-in hybrids that I was able to charge up with a 110 volt outlet, right by the same outlet that I plug any other outside accessory into. And in some cases, some of those cars will give me 40 or 50 miles of range, which is more than I would drive these days. Back when I was commuting back and forth to the office, I drove 100 plus miles round trip. And the plug-in hybrid would boost my fuel economy, but it wouldn't work. The other thing is, as we're starting to see EV adoption growing in places in Europe, we're also starting to see more power plant. You know, you have to make the electricity somehow. And now we're starting to see kind of a reemergence of nuclear, which kind of has to make you wonder a little bit, too. Is that, you know, is it safer? Is it better? I don't know. And I just, was it in the news just before we started talking about electric capacity and needing basically bigger wires to kind of run the capacity for, you know, all kinds of electric use? So it's great to have people. Again, I kind of go back, this is the golden age of the automobile. If you want a plug-in hybrid, you want a hybrid, you want a full electric vehicle, you want to buy, I took my electric bike for a ride one day. I have an electric bike. I enjoy riding it. You know, does it help reduce greenhouse emissions? I don't know. Maybe if I left my car home. So maybe.
Rick, thanks for your call. If you want to join the conversation, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. We're talking about the automotive industry, and we are talking about winter driving on Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, car advice. My guest, AAA's John Paul and Boston Globe contributing columnist Mickey Maynard. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566 or send quickly a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. We haven't yet talked about winter driving tips, safe winter driving tips. Mickey, a big one is to slow down.
Slow down.
What are some others?
So I'm a huge advocate for being a gentle driver, especially in the winter months. One of the issues that we face where I live is black ice. So I'm sure people in Maine are familiar with that. And this can pop up usually in the evening when it's been a little bit warmer during the day in the 30s, let's just say, and then it freezes at night and you can't see it. And if you hit black ice, it does not matter how big your vehicle is, you can go spinning. I've seen pickup, there's a road that I'll take in the area, and I will see pickup trucks down in the ditch, five at one time, because they hit black ice and spun, or they were just going too fast for the traction that they had on the road, because, you know, they can't necessarily pre-treat roads for a snowstorm, and they can't necessarily salt or clear them right after the snowstorm. So there's going to be a layer of slush out there, and you really will protect yourself very much if you can just slow down. Just go 10 miles slower than you would normally go. And, you know, if it's a 55 mile an hour zone, go 45. And yes, people might pile up behind you, but you'll get where you're going. And another thing that people forget about is that you actually want some weight in your car. We were talking about weight a little bit earlier, but it's not a bad thing to have a couple of bags of kitty litter or something, even garden soil in the back if you have a very light car like mine. It's very handy in case you do get stuck. It will help you get out of a ditch. Hopefully you're not in a ditch, but you might go off the side of the road and need a little traction to get back on the road. I carry newspaper for that purpose as well. I think, John, you had said something about floor mats. If you get stuck, you can use the floor mats to get traction.
Yeah, you can actually, you know, if your wheels are spinning, you're stuck in the snow, you kind of look around at what do you have with you? And a lot of people have floor mats in their cars, even better if they have the winter style floor mats. But no, you can put the floor mat under the tire that's spinning, and that will give you a little bit of extra traction. And, you know, a lot of times the floor mats have those little rubber bumps on the bottom of them to keep them from sliding around. Mm-hmm. And that's what will give you that little bit of extra traction to get going. Can be a handy thing in case you're stuck. But I always sort of recommend people have that winter emergency kit with them anyway. And a little fold-up shovel can be a lifesaver sometimes to get you unstuck from being somewhere. There's a lot of, you know, things that people sort of forget about. You know, we leave our warm house, we get into a warm car sometimes, and we forget. So having some extra warm clothes in the car is always a good idea.
I like it.
You know, boots. I remember years ago, I did a TV interview about driving in the wintertime, and I gave everybody all this great advice, and the reporter looked down at my loafers and said, "Where's your winter boots?" I'm like, yeah, they're in the car. But no, it's a good idea to kind of always prepare for the worst and hope for the best kind of thing when you're out driving. And, you know, your idea of slowing down makes all the sense in the world. Leave plenty of room between you and the cars in front of you, and get your eyes up and look way down the road so you can see everything that's going on, so you have plenty of time to react to it. Whenever you take your eyes off the road, you should be kind of sensing the idea that maybe I need to step on the brake, maybe I need to make an evasive maneuver. So a bunch of things that you need to think about. Driving in the wintertime and driving anytime, you always should be focused on just driving and nothing else. But especially in the winter, this is when you don't want to be distracted. This is when you want to put your phone away, put everything away, just focus on driving. You're absolutely right, Mickey.
I just want to mention that, you know, so I'm a Prius driver and I get tailgated a lot. And I think a lot of Prius drivers have had this experience, and some of it is just people in a hurry or people being a little hostile, whatever. But really, really want to emphasize keeping some separation. Please don't be in your big SUV and tailgate the Kia driver or the Prius driver. Please, please, please. Because what if you hit black ice and you start spinning and you spin into us or you spin into the vehicle behind you? Just be a little more polite in the winter, especially if there are challenging driving conditions. And when the summer comes, you know, I'm not going to judge you if you want to let loose, you shouldn't, but whatever, it's tempting. But especially in the winter, just, you know, kind of hold it back a little bit.
All right. That reminds me, we have an email here from Greg, which is interesting. Greg writes, "Huge size, overly powerful engines, blacked out windows, trumpeting mufflers, blinding headlights. Manufacturers euphemistically call it aggressive design. Could it be that all this actually encourages America's aggressive driving habits? Have any studies been done addressing this as a possible case? Or is it a case of don't go there? These vehicles are selling." Mickey, have they studied it? Do people drive more aggressively in big vehicles with blacked out windows?
Well, not, I don't know about blacked out windows, but I will say that I did write a column for the Boston Globe, I think about a year ago, where we talked about aggressive driving. And it's such a problem at where I live that the state has been running PSAs, public service announcements, for the last couple of years. It's basically asking people to tone it down. And one of the things that that Michigan has found, for example, in studying this, is that aggressive driving really took hold during the pandemic because the roads were empty. People knew the cops weren't out there, and they would drive as fast as they could manage on city streets. You know, so if you had a 25 mile an hour speed limit, people were driving 45. If you were on the freeway and the limit was 65 or 70, they were going 75 or 80. And the basic, you know, all these studies about traffic calming and how you're supposed to have speed bumps in your neighborhood and the signs that show your speed, and that those are thought to be deterrents. But what's really a deterrent is a cop by the side of the road.
Interesting. You know, I don't think I haven't experienced that as much as you have, thank goodness. So maybe it does mean that people in Maine are gentler drivers. This is just
I think we have more, might have more freeways than Maine does. So that might be part of it.
I'm going to go to an email here from Adam. John, there's a lot here and we're almost out of time. So I'm going to go real quick. Adam says, "I have a few questions about cars. Which windshield wiper fluid should be used in the winter? Can all cars take all types of windshield fluid?" We've already talked about air pressure. I won't ask that one. "What motor oil should be used? Should one use higher octane gas in the winter? And what is the difference between higher and lower octane gas?" Go.
Windshield washer fluid, you want to make sure it's good to at least minus 35 degrees. There's blue, orange, there's all different colors. Some have more soap in them, but basically they're all the same. All cars can use the same windshield wiper fluid. I haven't seen any that take anything different than anything else. But look for the one that really goes down to minus 35 degrees. The motor oil, whatever the vehicle manufacturer recommends. So your Prius might use 0W17 oil. My car uses 5W30 oil. Whatever the manufacturer recommends is the oil you should use. using higher octane gas in the wintertime just costs you money. It makes no sense to do it. If your car requires premium fuel, you should use it. If your car recommends premium fuel, you don't have to use it. Do a little comparison, see what your fuel economy is. But if it says recommends, not requires, you can use any gas you want as long as it's above 87 octane. And the difference between high octane and low octane gas is when it starts to detonate. So in other words, when it starts to explode under pressure, and higher compression engines use higher octane gas. Higher octane gas doesn't necessarily have any more additives in it than lower octane. My recommendation is go to toptiergas.com and look for the gasoline that has the best additive package, and it's in all grades. So 87, both of our family cars use 87 octane gas. One's turbocharged, one isn't, and they run just fine.
Thank you. Well done. Mickey, it occurs to me that we have a few minutes left, very few minutes left, and we haven't even talked about what's going on with self-driving cars. A few years ago, it's all we were talking about. I know there are places like San Francisco where people see them a lot and even use them to get places, but not really here in the Northeast. Are we sort of at some sort of plateau with that, or is the auto industry still working real hard at bringing us all self-driving cars?
Oh, that's a great question. So there's a company called Waymo, which is sort of the self-driving taxi company. And that people see them in San Francisco all the time. And they've since gone to Texas. And I believe Phoenix has some as well. And so the feeling right at the moment is that self-driving technology, if the whole car is going to be self-driving, then it's probably best used in fleets. It's probably best used as taxi services, as if you have a big corporate campus somewhere. And that some of the technology could be incorporated into passenger vehicles, kind of cars and trucks that we drive, but that it's probably, we're probably not going to own self-driving cars ourselves anytime soon.
All right. There are a few different emails here that I'm going to bundle them together, John, and get your thoughts. From Lucy. Lucy writes, please inform listeners about tire pressure sensors. She talks about when her tire pressure light came on, she had all her tires checked and filled, and it turned out that she had the sensors checked and she had a bad sensor, and it's going to cost money to have that replaced. Henry wants to say, be aware that studded snow tires do well in deep snow and ice, but on a dry pavement, they can cause a vehicle to behave erratically. The steering can wander and feel loose, and that studded tires do not do well at high speeds. He writes, police vehicles do not use studded snow tires for that reason. And then Gray writes, be wary of putting a lot of weight in the rear of your front wheel drive car. It will reduce traction in your drive wheels, which in the front of your vehicle. So all these warnings, and I'm wondering if you agree with these three emailers.
Well, let's go from back to front, because I'll probably forget what the first question was. Adding too much weight to the back of a front-wheel drive car can reduce traction. So the idea of keeping a little bit of kitty litter or sand back there, not so much for the weight, but for the ability to put it down on the road in case the roads get slippery, makes sense. Studded snow tires on a dry road actually reduce traction. But if you drive someplace where it's icy, snowy, you live on the top of a glacier, there's nothing like studded snow tires. They work really, really well. I'm a proponent of the new all-weather tires. The fellow from VIP talked about them quickly. They kind of have all the good attributes of a good winter tire, but you can use them all year round. They're great. And I don't remember what the first question was.
It was about beware of your tire sensor, that tire it may pressure, not be the pressure.
A lot of tire pressure sensors, there's two different types, but the one that tells you the actual reading, a non-replaceable battery, and they have about a 7 to 10 year life. So if you drive a 7, 8, 9 year old car and the tire pressure warning light comes on, it may be the sensor is just faulty. So go back to the old fashioned way, buy a $5 tire gauge and check them and see how your tires are actually doing.
Yeah, you know, I have heard that advice from others as well, that $5 tire pressure gauge. Just a few seconds, I'll read this email from George. George wants to talk about his Ford Maverick Hybrid, $30,000 new, 48 miles per gallon since we bought it. It is fairly small, extremely versatile, and has an American label on it. We've had it a year, and we love it. We've talked in the past, John, about how the Maverick, in your view, is a game changer. So I want to thank everybody who emailed and we were not able to get to. This is always a very popular program. And thank our guests, of course. John Paul, Senior Manager of Public Affairs and Traffic Safety at AAA Northeast. He is also the host of the Car Doctor Radio podcast. And Mickey Maynard is a Boston Globe contributing columnist and author of The End of Detroit. She also publishes Intersection, Everything That Moves on Substack. Today's sound engineer was Chris Bridges. Main Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, ways to lend a hand and help those in need. If you'd like to subscribe to our newsletter, go to maincalling.org. It's easy and free. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.